Welcome to Your Aged Care Compass podcast. Join us to find out how to support your older loved ones at home. We're going to help you make sense of Australia's aged care system. We talk about legal and financial considerations for ageing and how chronic health conditions impact your older loved ones' well-being. And we share real life stories of where it went wrong for people and how we got them back on track.
Hello and welcome to today's episode. I'm Coral, your host, and today I'm chatting with Jenny Kirshner. Jenny is a pharmacist with more than 20 years in the healthcare and pharmacy sectors. She has a deeply personal experience of loneliness and is a passionate clinical entrepreneur who is out to inspire, educate, and mobilise the entire pharmacy industry to help address loneliness at scale. Jenny is the founder of PALS, Pharmacy Addressing Loneliness and Social Isolation. PALS is the first international pharmacy initiative developing a roadmap for the pharmacy sector to address loneliness. The longer-term goal is for pharmacists to have an in-depth understanding of the health effects associated with loneliness and how to address them, and for this to become an intrinsic part of pharmacy practice across Australia and globally. Jenny is the creator of the world's first pharmacist training program on loneliness, launched in partnership with the Pharmaceutical Society of Australia. Jenny, welcome to the show. You've been a pharmacist in the public health sector and retail sector. Tell us a bit about the work you undertook in these roles.
It's so lovely to be here, Coral, and thank you for having me. I've worked across the board, everything from a clinical pharmacist, so working in a hospital setting, really involved in multidisciplinary care for patients, so working with different doctors and nurses and allied health team to optimise medication care for patients. I've also worked in community pharmacy, really enjoying engaging with local communities and running health promotion type activities. I've also worked as a national health programs pharmacist for one of the big pharmacy banner groups, which really had a focus on clinical services and professional care services and being able to create those and roll those out or implement those across a large number of pharmacies to really try and drive improvement in health outcomes for patients. So yeah, I've really had a taste of it all. And more recently, in the last couple of years, I've dipped my fingers into digital health and how that can play a role also in improving health outcome.
Oh. And what are you working on right now?
So as you shared, I'm a pharmacist that very passionate about addressing loneliness. So really my focus currently is to help drive awareness and educate pharmacists on the concerns of loneliness, the impacts of loneliness on health, and really empower pharmacists to lean in to the initial discomfort of addressing loneliness because it can be uncomfortable. It's not something we have talked about before. So lean into that initial discomfort and then recognize the transformative influence you can have on patients and their health outcomes by addressing their social health needs.
Fantastic. I am really looking forward to this discussion today. So PALS originated from your own personal experience. Can you describe for our listeners what loneliness looked like for you?
Yeah, and I love that you started that question by asking what it looks like for me, because it's important to preface this by saying loneliness can look and feel different for people. It's very subjective, which is very important. So it's an experience, it's a feeling that everyone experiences differently. So for me, I had a lot of experience early on in my 20s and even 30s. And the truth is, it was a very painful experience. It's a very internal experience. And as I've often shared, to the outside, people would have not recognized that I was lonely. I looked bubbly and outgoing, so I managed to hide loneliness well, and that is not uncommon. There's a real shame and stigma that comes with that experience of loneliness, and so often people hide it well. So when you asked me what it felt like for me, it felt like I was invisible. That's the feeling. It kind of affects you at that soul level. It was quite physically painful at the heart area of my body. And actually, science does show that loneliness and social rejection can cause the feeling of physical pain. And that is recognized in brain scans also. So it literally does cause pain. It was a painful experience. And I recall at times just feeling like, you know, you're in company, you can be in company, but you don't feel like you're being seen for who you are. And that can make you feel invisible. And when you feel invisible, it can really make you question whether you matter, whether your existence is significant. So yeah, I think that's probably a good introduction to the fact that it's painful. It can make people feel at the core that they don't belong, and that there's an element, a huge element of shame and stigma that you hide it. So what did it look like? To other people, it didn't look like anything. And probably the question is, what did it feel like? It felt exhausting. That's another word. I haven't shared this element of it before, but I recall when loneliness was very present for me, and it was also present contextually. So there were some environments where I felt okay, and there were other environments or times where I felt so exhausted from the hiding. So there's an exhaustion that comes with loneliness because you've got a mask. You're acting to the world that everything's fine, but inside you're feeling like you're not good enough, you don't matter, and that is deeply painful, and there's an exhaustion that comes with that. So I'll start by just sharing that was the experience, you know, for me. And again, it was contextual. So there were times when I could feel okay. I should also highlight loneliness is not a mental health issue. Loneliness is an experience and an emotion. And it's very human. So most people at some point in their life will feel lonely. And loneliness can sometimes be triggered by an event. So if you move out of home and it's a new environment and you don't know anyone, or if you are grieving, if you've lost someone that you love or come out of a relationship, there are many triggers, reasons why you might feel lonely for a period of time. And that's really human. That's a sign. Loneliness is a painful experience. That's a sign that your social needs are not being met in the way that you need them to be. So much like hunger, you can feel uncomfortable with hunger because that makes you feel like there's a pain there saying, hey, I'm hungry. It's a sign. So when you're thirsty, that's uncomfortable. And it's an alert to your body to say, hey, I'm thirsty and I need some water. So go and motivates you to take an action or a behavior. In the same way, loneliness is a social pain that alerts you to the fact that your social needs are not being met, and it shouldn't be a nudge to say, let's see what we can do about that.
That's amazing, Jenny. Thank you for such a sensitive description of a very uncomfortable and, as you've described, painful experience, painful emotion. And you just touched on that, but just leading into the next question, I'm obviously going to ask, how common or prevalent is loneliness?
Yep. And it's a great segue from what we just discussed. I'll start by saying loneliness is common, and there's an element of it being common because it's very human. Every human may experience loneliness and probably does experience loneliness at some point in their life. So it's common in that it's a shared human experience. It's universal. But when we look at loneliness and the negative implications of loneliness, what we know in Australia, and I'll start with Australia and then I'll give you a global statistic, is that in Australia, they say that 1 in 3 adults feel lonely, with 1 in 6 reporting severe loneliness. Now, the World Health Organization have just released a report, and it's the first report in its history. So in 78 years, the World Health Organization have never spoken about loneliness or social connection. And in the last month, they've released a 400 plus page report, really flagging loneliness as a significant health priority. And what they say is that 1 in 6 people globally experience loneliness.
That's a lot of people. So, Jenny, is there a difference between loneliness and social isolation?
Absolutely. And that's really important that you've called that out. So I'm actually going to read now the definition from the World Health Organization report, and then we can discuss it. But I'm actually going to read it because this is the consensus definition. We're trying to be very specific and clear globally about how we describe these things. So we're all talking about the same thing. So loneliness is a painful personal feeling. It happens when the relationships that you have don't match the relationships that you want or need. You can feel lonely even if you're surrounded by people. Maybe you have friends, but maybe you don't feel understood or supported. Everybody feels lonely sometimes, as I've mentioned, like after a breakup. This kind of loneliness usually fades away after a while, but if it lasts a long time, it can be a serious problem for your health and well-being. So loneliness in this description is a subjective feeling. Okay, so it's really important that it's a feeling, it's subjective. In contrast, we'll talk about social isolation. Social isolation is more about numbers, like having few relationships or not seeing people often enough. So for example, someone who lives alone or rarely talks to other people might be socially isolated.
Yep.
Person can be isolated but not feel lonely, and some people like being alone. Still, social isolation can harm physical and mental health, especially over time. So social isolation is objective. It's about the number of people or how often you might see them.
Okay.
So this helps to explain, this difference in definition helps to explain why you can be in a room full of people, right? So you are not socially isolated, but you can still feel lonely. Or you can be alone, but not feel lonely. Right. So it's actually they're very different things. So the distinction between helps you understand that one is objective about the number and one is about a feeling.
Yes. Yes. I understand that. So how does loneliness impact a person's health?
The impacts on health are so significant that I just was really shocked when I discovered all of these scientific facts. So these are supported by robust scientific evidence. Okay, so it's important to know that. These are facts. This is known. This is well studied. So loneliness can have impacts on mental health, on physical health, and on cognitive health. So we'll break those down a little bit. And I'm going to read a couple of statistics. So loneliness can increase the risk of coronary heart disease, so heart disease, by 29%. It can increase the risk of having a stroke by 32%.
Oh, my goodness.
It can increase the risk of dying early, of premature death, by 26%. It can reduce your immune system. It can increase your blood pressure. It can increase your cholesterol. It can increase inflammation. It can increase your risk of diabetes. Okay? As we've mentioned, loneliness is not a mental health illness, but it puts you at risk, a higher risk of mental health illness. So people who are lonely have an increased risk of anxiety and an increased risk of depression.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. In the latest Suicide Prevention Australia report, again in the last couple of months, loneliness was the second higher risk factor for suicide, which surpassed the risk factor of the housing and accommodation crisis. So currently in Australia, it is the second highest risk factor for suicide. To stop there for a minute. I mean, think about that.
Very sobering statistics.
Yeah. And I should say, when we look at the data, loneliness in younger people, so from about 16 to 25, have the highest levels of loneliness.
Wow.
Yeah. I'll just go back to the impacts on loneliness for a moment. There's links between loneliness, cognitive decline, and dementia. So loneliness is associated with cognitive decline over time, is a risk factor for Alzheimer's disease, and is a risk factor for the onset and worsening severity and lower quality of life for Parkinson's disease in a recent study. So this is significant. And somewhere where I've looked at it talks about not just loneliness, but social isolation also has an impact on dementia. And I know that the audience we're talking to is an aged care audience. This is significant. You know, for heart health, for well-being, for mental health, and for cognitive health.
Wow. I feel like at this point, and I'm going to step outside the focus of the podcast for a moment, because obviously the focus is older people, but with those statistics in mind, And considering that we have adult, the sandwich generation, who are also raising younger children, that this loneliness can affect anybody across that spectrum, I really feel like there needs to be investment in public education and programs to mitigate loneliness, because this affects all of us.
And so can I just add one more thing, if that's okay? 2 points. Number one, you're right. It affects all of us across all ages, across all countries. So we have to be aware loneliness does not discriminate. It can affect everybody. Okay. And then the second part of that is the beauty. And I think this subject can feel very heavy, but I think it's also important to bring the light. And the light is that the protective effects of social connection are profound. They're even greater than the risk factors caused by them. So we'll come to that, but it is really important that all of us start to talk about social health and social connection. In the World Health Organization report, the definition of health by the World Health Organization includes, and I'll read it, health is a state of complete physical, mental, and social well-being, and not just the absence of disease or infirmity. There is a picture, and the picture has a pyramid, and it's got health at the top, and it's got three pillars. Health is made up of physical well-being, of mental well-being, and of social well-being. Mm-hmm. Social health has long been overlooked, but it's the core of social connection. So the fact that we know that if you're talking to somebody, you'd say, are you doing exercise? Are you eating well? It is as critical to ask, have you got people that you can trust, that you turn to, that you can feel like you're seen and that you can be yourself around? Social health is critical. So that ties in. I think it's important. Yes, loneliness is devastating when it's long-term and it's not resolved and it has health impacts. But social connection has protective effects. So there are things that we can do.
I'm so glad you mentioned that, because on previous episodes that I've been speaking with guests and we've been talking about the new aged care program Support at Home that starts in November, we've been emphasising the importance of remaining connected to community. It's not a luxury. It's essential to keeping older people well and able and living a meaningful life.
It's absolutely, like you said, this is not a nice to have. This is a critical. This is a foundational. This is a must have.
Absolutely. So we touched on how loneliness can affect health, but I wanted to ask you about, let's just take a closer look at that, at the different impacts of loneliness on older people compared with younger people, Jenny.
It's an interesting question. I actually don't believe that there's enough information to differentiate that, or not that I'm across, to be honest. So my understanding is the effects are across the board, right? Whether you're young or whether you're old, if you have long-term loneliness, it can have effects on your health. So the research into the younger children and young adults, that's emerging still. There's a lot, and that's also important to say, there's a lot of evidence and research still required. Evidence is emerging. Investment, as you said, we need investment in education. We also need investment in research, investment in policy and government initiatives. So there's a lot of, this is a new space. Whilst it's been going on for a long time, it's new in terms of its highlight and it's new in terms of what's required. So I would say everything that we've just described, all of those impacts are relevant for older people and for younger people if it persists long enough. But there's not enough research, and I'd have to come back to you on that one. There's not enough research to know exactly the difference at the moment that I'm aware of. But my understanding is the impacts are across the board.
Yeah, of course. So, Jenny, what can pharmacists do for lonely older people?
I love that question. I'm going to start by saying it's really interesting. I did an interview with the World Health Organization, and when I first reached out as a pharmacist and said, can we talk about loneliness, the scientific or technical advisor said, oh, I'd never really thought about pharmacists. And then as we continued to speak towards the end of the conversation, he said, you know what? This all just makes sense to me now. It dawns on me that pharmacists can have a huge role to play. So I bring that example up to say not everyone initially would think about the role of pharmacists. They think of pharmacists in terms of medication and dispensing. Mm-hmm. They would not necessarily think about what, pharmacists can do to help with loneliness. But if we explore that a bit, what we recognise is that pharmacists see patients, and especially elderly patients, all of the time on a frequent basis. And beyond seeing them on a frequent basis, there's a personal relationship there. Pharmacists know where people kind of live. They know a little bit about their health because of the medication. They know their names. They probably know their pet's names. They probably know what they did last weekend. There's what we call social capital. There's an established trust and relationship that exists, and that is unique and precious, and it's a privileged position as a pharmacist to be involved in patients in that way. And so what can pharmacists do? Pharmacists can recognise, as we've talked about, that loneliness is significant. It's not something that we should turn our back on, and that much like we talk about healthy eating and exercise as part of our care and holistic health approach, we should be leaning in and talking about social connection and loneliness more. So what can pharmacists do? We can educate patients. But before that, let's go back a little bit. What we can do is recognize that those little encounters that we have with the patients who sometimes come in just to have a conversation, really, spreading out their script fulfillment just so they can have a chat, that those moments matter. And that if you've got the ability to give a patient an extra minute of your full attention and full presence and just be involved in a conversation and care. I mean, pharmacists care by nature. It's a blanket statement, but I'd say pharmacists care by nature, and that's why they're in the profession. But if you give people a little bit more time, that goes a long way and can be transformative. So number one, I would say pharmacists can recognize that it is within their scope of practice, within their professional responsibility, now that we know that loneliness has significant impacts on health, backed by scientific research and robust evidence, it is our professional responsibility to respond to loneliness. So when you see, and a lot of pharmacists would know the patients who come in who are either lonely or isolated, though with loneliness you might need to ask, but isolation you know, don't turn our backs on this. Recognize that whilst it's uncomfortable, and we've discussed that it is uncomfortable, if you just kind of ask someone, take an extra moment to ask someone, do they have plans for the weekend? Are they seeing someone? Have they spoken to someone this week? Have they got somebody that they haven't spoken to for a long time that they might want to reach out to? Give some little hints. You don't have to directly talk about loneliness because that can be confronting. And as we said, it might trigger shame and stigma. But you can disguise that conversation in conversation about social health. I mean, pharmacists, as we're speaking now, it became obvious to me that we could say, did you know that the World Health Organization say that social connection is critical for your health? So let's have a bit of a chat. And if you don't have someone that you're seeing, pharmacists can get really creative about some of the solutions that they could offer. Yes. So I think we'll get to that in a moment. But I would say, as pharmacists, know about loneliness. Recognize that you can talk to patients about social connection because it's a critical protective factor for health outcome. Get creative in how you talk about it. And it doesn't have to cost a lot of money for the pharmacy to do it. And it doesn't have to take a lot of time. When you're speaking to your patients like you normally do, if that's at the counter doing counseling, if it's in the clinic room when you're doing a consultation, if that's an immunization or medication review, there are lots of opportunities to embed this conversation about the protective factors of or the protective effects of social connection in everyday conversations.
Community pharmacies keep Australia healthy. With 6,000 locations nationwide, they're open early, late, and longer for convenient, accessible, and safe care. Pharmacists provide home medicine reviews, dose administration aids, and essential vaccinations. Thanks to additional training, many can now treat common conditions like ear infections, wounds, and skin issues. They also support management of chronic conditions in partnership with your healthcare team. Ask your pharmacist how they can help you and your family stay well.
Fantastic. I love that. And look, I admit I was one of those people that kind of went, it didn't dawn on me either, that the pharmacist is that constant connection, social connection to the older person's health, older people visiting the pharmacy, I know my mum's pharmacist knew her so well, and yet I'm guilty of not realising the importance of that connection as well. So when I discovered you and PALS and what you were doing, I was super excited, and I'm still very excited for the work that you're doing and spreading this, Jenny. So let's talk now about social prescribing. What is that?
I love that you asked me that. So social prescribing, and I should have a formal definition, but social prescribing is really when health professionals or trusted individuals in the community, so it doesn't have to be a health professional, prescribe, and I'm using little, our listeners can't see, but I'm using my little fingers to put quotation marks around it. So prescribe non-medical solutions for patients that help increase their connection, social connection. And also at times, social prescribing in the broader umbrella statement might address other, what's called social determinants of health. So other factors that influence health outcomes that might be financially related or housing situations. But for this conversation, we'll say social prescribing, and in Australia at the moment, there's a real focus on social prescribing that is helping to address loneliness. Mm. And so an example of that might be, if I recognise that I'm speaking to a patient who might be experiencing loneliness, or at risk of loneliness, I want to know what's important to that person. I want to know what brings that person joy, what makes their life more wonderful, or what could make their life more wonderful or magical. And just say I'm chatting with someone and I recognize that they love playing chess, for example, and I'm aware that there's a chess club around the corner because I've done my research as a pharmacist. I've done what's called asset mapping. I've had a look what's in the local community. And I've got a list, a database of all the things that are available locally and information about how much they might cost and any criteria for entering the program. So I know what's available. I'm a community pharmacist. I'm at the center of the community and I should know locally what is available. And I could recommend to this patient, hey, did you know that there's a chess club down the corner? They meet once a week and it's really inviting and lovely. And I can be a facilitation. I can help connect that person into that club. And that could be a way of them doing something that they love in a social setting, which gives an opportunity to increase social connection. At the core of social prescribing, and it is absolutely beautiful, this concept, it is what's meaningful to you? What is meaningful to a person? And how do we get them then involved in that? And there are different models of social prescribing, which perhaps we can go into at a different point. Those that involve what's called a link worker, which is someone who actually helps a patient enter the program. So the patient might be feeling nervous to go by themselves, or they might not have the transport, or they might not have the confidence socially. So in certain models of social prescribing, you might need a facilitator or a connector, or what we call a link worker. Someone that says, you know what, the first time I'll go with you, I'll take you there, or I'll stay with you, whatever you need. But in the pharmacy setting, I'll give a bit more context. I think the role that the pharmacist in the pilots that we've looked at now are having more of a informal connector role, recognising what's available and knowing your patients well, helping to connect them into those services. So the most important thing about social prescribing really is that you don't just want to say to a patient, hey, there's a knitting club around the corner. Why don't you join that? That is not meaningful to that person. If that is not something that makes them shine or brings them to spark and joy, that's not what we're trying to do here. Social prescribing is understanding, really learning the person, listening, understanding what makes them feel great, and then connecting them to opportunities in the local community to facilitate that. And then from that, when you're doing something you love, when you're around other people, that social element, then there's shared interests, there's things to connect on. And again, it sounds so simple, but the evidence shows that social prescribing significantly reduces loneliness.
Yes.
So there again, social prescribing, which was called out by the World Health Organization in their report as one of the interventions for addressing loneliness, is an evidence-based intervention that can be used, and pharmacy can play a role in facilitating that.
Absolutely. It's so exciting. And the thing that popped into my head while you were discussing that was that should a support worker of the older person, this is a person who has a home care package, should that support worker or that carer come into the pharmacy to pick up the Webster pack there is another opportunity for a discussion about, hey, how's Mary going at home? How's she feeling at the moment? And using the support worker or the carer as the conduit for the transport or the support or the introduction to the bridge group or the bingo group down the road as well. So many possibilities.
Absolutely love that. And you bring up another point. Carers or even support workers definitely are at risk of feeling lonely themselves.
Yes.
So as a pharmacist, if you've got carers who are coming in, always check on the carer also.
Yeah, absolutely.
Check on the patient, but that is a high-risk cohort for loneliness are carers. And if we think about it, it makes sense. You're giving a lot if you're a sole carer and perhaps you don't have other people to chat with or debrief about or support you. So thank you for bringing that up, Coral. It's really important that if people are coming in to collect medications in the pharmacy, even the support worker, it's important to check in how they're going as well. But I love your idea. Absolutely. I will say also, some people sometimes cannot get out. Maybe they are not physically able or mobile. And there are other online intervention options as well.
Mm.
So there are some national directories available. Like there's a national directory that's funded by the Department of Health and Aging. It's called Live Up. And they have a directory in there for social activities.
Right.
And Ending Loneliness Together also have a directory specifically targeting loneliness of activities. So some are physical, but then you might also find things that are available online. This is an invitation to create opportunities and be creative about how we can connect people with the things that bring them joy and opportunities then to connect with like-minded people and increase social connection.
I love that. So you've developed training for pharmacists to recognise and address loneliness. Tell us about this training.
Yeah. So since I experienced loneliness early on, I thought I want to do something about this. I really need to speak about it. And if we're going to do anything, even social prescribing, my strong belief is we need to understand loneliness first, because when you understand loneliness, how it can feel for people and its implications on health and well-being, then you feel motivated. You have more context and understanding about leaning in to address that, especially because it's uncomfortable at the beginning to kind of approach these subjects because we're not used to it. So I was determined that I was going to develop an education that would solve this problem or the gap, because health professionals at the moment have no education on loneliness in curriculum. Psychologists don't either.
Right.
So I went out and created, as you mentioned, a world-first pharmacist training program on loneliness. And what that involved was a lot of hustle. So I reached out to people like the World Health Organization and I said, hey, I'm just Jenny, very passionate about this, and I feel like we need to make a training program. Will you let me interview you as an expert in the field? And I eventually got some yeses, and that was really motivating. So the training program is an online training program that you can do at your own pace. There's 5 hours, so it's comprehensive, and it's accredited for what's called 10 CPD or continuing professional development points. So a significant amount of points. So pharmacists need 40 a year. So this goes a great way to helping you get your points. And the training program involves interviews with experts, global experts on social connection and loneliness. So we have people like Professor Joanna Badcock, who is the founder of the Global Initiative on Loneliness and Connection. We have Dr. Christopher Micton from the World Health Organization, Professor Julianne Hodlonstadt, who's leading expert in social connection. So there's a robust amount of experts in there. Professor Joanna Badcock came on as a scientific advisor, and I'm sharing that again to highlight everything in the training program is scientifically supported and validated, because it's very important that we give the evidence. In the training program, I also interviewed pharmacists on the ground who are already doing things to address loneliness. This is really important because, again, it makes pharmacists recognize that it's within scope, that there are people doing it. You're hearing stories from other people that it doesn't cost much, it doesn't take too much time, but the impacts are profound. And some of the pharmacists, a lot of them said this is the most meaningful work they've done addressing loneliness. And these are pharmacists who are very qualified, who have worked across the industry. This was the most meaningful work. I'll just share a quick high level of what's covered in the course. We talk about what is loneliness, how common it is, the health impacts, the evidence linking loneliness and medication use. We talk about stigma. And then importantly, we talk about what the pharmacist can do at a patient level, at a pharmacy level, and at a community level. And we also look at loneliness within the pharmacy profession. So loneliness in pharmacists and pharmacy students and pharmacy interns.
Wow.
And as you mentioned, I'll just flag that I was very fortunate to secure a partnership with the Pharmaceutical Society of Australia, which is the peak education body for pharmacists. And they partnered to launch the program, and it's had unprecedented interest in enrollment numbers, which really speaks to the fact that I think people are recognising loneliness is present and it is time that we step up and do something about it.
Congratulations, Jenny. That is just remarkable. Absolutely. I take my hat off to you. Courage, tenacity, you know, these are the words that are popping into my head because I understand the time and energy that it takes to initiate and launch something like that. So congratulations to you.
Thank you. And just for a fun fact, I mean, I've done this on no budget. It's really been sweat and tears and no funding, but I just felt absolutely determined. It felt like something I had to do in my soul. It felt like a bit of a legacy contribution. It just felt like it's something I had to do so I would feel at peace, given that I experienced it so much myself and nobody was talking about it at that time and nobody recognised the impact that it was having and needed to raise awareness and educate the pharmacy industry so we can start to be part of the solution. By no means the whole solution. Everyone has a role to play, but be part of the solution.
Yeah. So this week is Loneliness Awareness Week across the country, and this year's campaign is aptly themed Moments Matter, which I love. For anyone listening in today, what are some simple gestures someone could offer to an older person who might be lonely?
So I love the fact that you brought up simple, because again, I think it's important to recognise simple doesn't mean that it's not profound, right? So simple, in this case, moments matter, really highlight that little moments do matter. They are profound. So things like just checking in on someone, just saying, nice to meet you. How has your day been? Right? As we said, asking the question and being really present. Don't be distracted. Don't be looking on your phone. Don't be thinking about anything else. Commit to yourself that you're going to be present for those few minutes when you're engaging with someone to listen deeply and absorb what they're saying. There are other things. People have different ways of connecting. Perhaps you share a personal story and then ask a question. And I'm actually sharing some examples now from the resources on the Loneliness Awareness Week page, which is great. I think you guys should go and check out those resources. So things like, I recently tried a new recipe. Do you enjoy cooking? So as you can see, these are really simple things, but they're ways of opening conversations. There are other examples that I wanted to share, things like small talk. So sometimes we might think small talk really is just a filler, but actually that's not the truth. Small talk really helps build connection. So things like, oh, your top looks nice tonight, or your hair looks really lovely today. That also leads to compliments. Little compliments or comments go a long way to letting someone feel like they are being seen. Mm. They are being heard and they are being appreciated and that they are being valued and that they mean something. At the core of this, humans want to feel like they are important and that they are valuable and that they mean something just by being themselves. So other things are things like rituals, having something that's repetitive. So if someone's coming to the pharmacy every time, perhaps you have a little ritual that you have with them when you ask them about their weekend, or you just smile. You know, if you're busy, you just smile. But that repetitive ritual kind of builds a sense of continuity and belonging. Unexpected helping. There's a lot of evidence that shows that volunteering is bi-directional. It helps the person who is volunteering and it helps the person receiving that. So little things might be volunteering to help somebody, an elderly patient across the road. If they can't get out and you need to go and get veggies for them or go to the fruit shop or go to the shopping center, little thing, help a little bit will help you feel connected because you're doing something, you're contributing, you're doing something meaningful. So what else? We've spoken about small talk, compliments, unexpected help, even unspoken thing, like just kind of, as I said, nodding or agreeing. You're present to the conversation. The nonverbal communication can go a long way also. And then trying to find common interests and building from there. You know, if you know that someone likes knitting, engage in conversations about that. Show that you're interested in what they're interested in. So there's some of the things that come to mind straight away that are simple things that can just be done in the general public. And then perhaps we can have a look at some of the examples in pharmacy.
Yes, look, and I'm going to take this moment to actually challenge every person who's listening into the podcast today to adopt one of those simple strategies that Jenny has just mentioned and look for the older person or the older people in your own community and stop and make a difference in their life this week. If you're rushing home from work, from the train, the bus, whatever, you walk into the corner store, if you see an older person or if you are aware of an older neighbour, I challenge you all to stop and do something, to have a conversation or to offer a gesture this week. And I hope that if you do have the courage, it's simple. Just do that, start it this week, and then I hope that you continue this ongoing long after this week and you make that moment special for that older person in your community.
And I love, again, I'm just going to reflect on one thing, I can't help it, is that when you said adopt some of these strategies, I don't know if they're strategies. I think you just touched on it also. It's just being human. Mm-hmm. It's just being a really present, caring human. There's something that you said, simple. Moments matter is significant because it's simple. I agree. I will adopt your challenge. Let's just make sure that we're all choosing to get off our screens, choosing to stand away from distraction, choosing to come outside of our own challenges sometimes, step aside from our own rumination or our own problems and be present to someone else. And let's rebuild the fabric of our society by these simple one-at-a-time moments. And, yeah, that can have a profound change in what we value in society. We're bringing the value back to social connection. We're bringing the value back to simple conversation.
Absolutely. And look, we are nearing time, Jenny, but I did want to ask you about this program or this initiative that we had spoken about before today, which is the Pen Pal program between kids and older people. Tell me about that.
So there was a pharmacist, a lovely special pharmacist that I interviewed for the pharmacist training program on loneliness, and she shared with me that she had created a Pen Pal program. I'm not sure that it's running currently. And it was like at just before COVID it started, and then it continued after COVID. And it was simple. What she did is she recognized that there were patients in her pharmacy who were not connected, especially during lockdown, and there was a local primary school. So she decided that her pharmacy would be the conduit between having the children at the local primary school write letters, and she would deliver those, just in terms of confidentiality and privacy, to the elderly patients. And that went on. She said she was so surprised that even way after COVID, people would come in and say, I've got my letter now for my pen pal. And she shared two stories. Number one, that they had a day when the elderly people, or the patients in this case, got to meet the young children. So they actually had a day where they got to meet, which was so special. But there was a gentleman who had serious heart failure, and he was needing to decide if he was going to take treatment or not take treatment, medication treatment. And he said to his wife, she shared, he said to his wife, but what is my buddy Bob, or whatever the child's name was, I can't recall at this moment, but what is my buddy going to do if I don't take treatment? I feel like I'm going to let that person down, this little buddy of mine. So this little child really saved this person's life. And again, simple moments, letter exchanges. Mm-hmm. But for that little buddy, I'm sure that he loved the relationship with the elderly patient. And for that elderly patient, this was life-saving. This gave him meaning. This gave him reason to wake up, to be motivated, to care for his health, because he felt a responsibility. He felt that he was able to positively impact someone else's life with his own stories, with his own history. And so that's just an example of the pharmacist said it didn't take too much time. It didn't cost too much money. It was about seeing the problem and solving it with a creative solution. And she got her pharmacy intern involved, and it was a collaborative initiative for the pharmacy. And the interesting thing is that the intern student had to submit the report. She'd done a report on this project, and the organization kept failing her and said, this is not a health promotion activity. And the pharmacist kept saying, you go back. This is the evidence. You go and show them that social connection is critical. And eventually it was passed. And then she got 6 news reporters coming and interviewing her about the project that she did. So wow. In other words, you know, it's not always obvious that this is health promotion, that this is really serious, but it absolutely is. So yeah, that's just a sweet story to share about the things that can be done anywhere.
Mm-hmm. I'd love to see more of that. I think that's really special. So look, Jenny, this has been a fantastic conversation, and I want to say thank you to you for your courage and commitment to raising the profile of pharmacists working to address loneliness. And congratulations on the incredible success of PALS. Next week, we're continuing this conversation with pharmacist Carly Thompson of 777 Pharmacies and Catherine Nguyen of DaVita, who have partnered to offer social prescribing in pharmacies in Perth. It's a fantastic conversation, so listeners, please tune into that. Jenny, thank you so much. This has just been the most heartwarming, wonderful conversation. I really appreciate your time today.
Thank you so much.
Hey, care community. Thanks for listening to this episode. So you never miss a show, make sure you subscribe to our podcast. If you'd like to know more about what we do, head to our website, cmeacn.com.au.